is Kelly Lally, and I'm here in Park City, Kentucky with Mr. Troy Davis. Today is July the 14th, 1987. When were you born, Mr. Davis?
Born May the 12th, 1922.
And how long have you lived in this area?
Practically all my life. I was born here. I lived in Louisville for a little while. I lived in Indianapolis for a little while, then back here, and I've spent just about, with the exceptions of the war, during the war, I was gone for 3 years in the Pacific.
How many people were in your family when you were growing up?
My immediate family?
Mm-hmm.
There were six of us, my father, mother, three sisters, and myself.
And where did fall as far as your age? Were you the oldest, or?
I was second. I have a sister that's a couple years older than I am. And, of course, the two young ones.
How did your family make your living, make the living?
Well, part of it was farming. Part of it, there was about 200 acres of what is now a part of Mammoth Cave National Park that my family owned. And really, my first recollection was being on that farm, and that's where I spent my childhood days. But my father also worked in the city at public work. He was pretty handy at things like that, and he liked to do that as well as farming. So that's the beginning of when I first remember.
What were times like for you and your family during the Depression?
At that time, at my age, I really didn't worry about anything. But as time went on, I realized times were very hard. But I guess we were pretty fortunate to have reasonably good health. And we farmed. And a lot of food came off the farm, not only my family, but the surrounding neighborhood. That's the way they lived mostly. And but times were hard. You didn't go out and look for something to buy. You went out when you had to buy something. And that's about the way it was that I remember it.
How did you hear about the CCC?
How did I hear about CCCs? I don't really know how to answer that.
How did you become acquainted with it?
Well, of course, we knew the government was taking land up for the park, and the word just got around to the country that there would be such a project as a CCC. And we really didn't know what to expect, except we knew it would be a group of boys, and they'd be doing various types of jobs around through the park. So just to say exactly how I heard about it would be a little bit hard to say. I was only about 9 or 10 years old at the time, maybe 11. So at that age, I didn't really pay much attention anyway.
How did you become involved with it when you were old enough?
Well, still at that age, or at that time, things were still kind of bad. There wasn't a lot of money to be made, and I was still in school age. So I dropped out of school, enrolled, and started school in there. And unfortunately, before I really got finished with it, it kind of played out. World War II was coming on pretty good. We weren't in it yet, but it was right on us. And I guess most people sensed it. A lot of boys already were leaving and volunteering the Army, Navy, or whatever. So anyway, that's really how I got started in it.
Then, You were telling me earlier that your father was involved.
Yes, he was. Since he had been connected with government work, such as I said about caretaker of one of the light towers for the old airplane that carried the mail, that he seemed to kind of stay with it. When he quit that or got out of it or it was discontinued, I don't really remember. The CCs were already underway, and he almost transferred from one into the other. Even though he was an enrollee to start with, then he fortunately got promoted to a little better job, and so that's the way he gets started.
In this area, how were men selected for the CCC, or did they just have to sign up, or?
No, they, just about any young fella, especially if they weren't married, and even some that were married, were anxious to get in it because there was no jobs to be had, or very few at least, and they would go to a lot of trouble to try to enlist or get, and of course the enlistment was supposed to be a 6 months thing at a time, and maybe that held true for a long time, I don't know, but as time went on, they would re-enlist. And I had a friend that had three different names that he enlisted in order to get back in. So, funny things like that happen, you know.
Did you know of anybody who was ever turned down for the CCC?
Not really. Unless they were just not eligible due to, wealth. More wealthy than some of the other people.
How old were you when you entered?
I expect I was 17.
And what year was this?
Oh, let's see. 17. That was about 1940, 41. In other words, it was just a year, or maybe less than that, the thing were breaking up. A lot of them had done gone. And I just wanted to get in on a part of it. And it was a little money and a little schooling. So it was about 1940, 39, 40, I guess.
Which camp were you in, Mr. Davis?
Number two. It was 543 was the number of it. 542, I believe it was.
And where was number two again?
It was located on highway, you might say on Highway 70. About 6 miles from Cave City, in toward Mammoth Cave. It was slightly off the road. There's a cave entrance there they called the New Entrance. I really don't know why they call it that, because there's other entrances. Maybe they just had to have a name for it. And maybe it was the newest. I don't know.
Do you remember how you felt when you left home for the camp?
Oh, yeah. I was tickled. I was happy. I was single, of course, and it was exciting, and I already knew something about it. I knew pretty well what to expect, and I enjoyed it, and part of it, just like any job, you didn't enjoy too much, but as a rule, I enjoyed all of it because I was the right age to do that.
You never got homesick, huh?
Oh, no.
Too close.
I was, fortunately, in that respect, I was close to home. And, as a matter of fact, I guess my father was still in it, too. He was, like I said, kind of a junior foreman, and I saw him every day, and he stayed at home. He traveled to and from the site there.
And you lived in the camp?
Oh, yeah, I did. Mm-hmm.
Did they give you any type of official training before you started work?
Not really. No, they didn't. They, I suppose that they took it for granted or something, that you really, you knew something, because in there, you didn't really have to know a lot. But to just about everybody in there had a trade or knew something and could do it. Even if they were educated or uneducated, they knew, they had different skills, and they did it quite well. They knew how to do it.
Can you describe for me your first day in camp? Do you remember that?
Yes, a little bit. I was, like I said, I was familiar with it. In a way, when I enlisted, I went to this particular camp, and I went into the office, and the officers knew me because of my father. So I told them what I was there for, and they said, okay, we'll sign you up. And I signed them. Well, I guess before I signed the necessary papers, we had a doctor, which he didn't seem to have a lot to do. And I well remember the examination, the physical, and what it amounted to. He did not use a stethoscope to check my heart. He simply, we were on the outside of the building, he simply put a piece of paper between his ear and my chest and listened. And he looked at my eyes. He didn't check them out to see how well I could see. And that was pretty well the examination. Now, I don't know why or how I got by with it that easy, because within the next few days, there was new boys coming through. And that seemed to be the first place they'd come, and they'd get their examination, physical. Then they were shipped out to other camps, out into other states, a lot of them. And that, and actually I was in there helping. Maybe I was taking some of them's weight, or maybe I was taking their height, or something like that. Then given probably a dozen boys, men or boys, whatever, and to get them to do something, they asked me, says, take them down behind the camp on the hillside and see that they pick up sticks and poles and pile them up, kind of clean up the wooded area around the camp. So that was about the extent of my first day at the camp.
They already gave you a little bit of a leadership position.
Oh, yes, they did. Uh-huh.
Hmm. Describe how you were paid.
Paid $30 a month. I got $5. My family got $25.
How did you spend your $5?
Oh, my $5, well, I bought all the gas I could, which was pretty cheap then. And
you had a car?
Long about that. Well, my dad had a car, and I had keys to it. And when he wasn't using it and I was away from the camp, when I'd get away, why? Well, I'd begin to notice the girls and was dating a little bit, you know. So that's that part of that, I guess. I guess most of that's where my $5 went. But I managed to get a hold of a little money if I needed it. My dad or some of the family that had more money than I did, well, I could always borrow a little bit. But that, and I get, yeah, at that time I guess I smoked too. It took a little bit to buy cigarettes, probably a dime a pack, something like that. And I had to stretch them out a little bit.
Did you go to any of the towns, Park City or Cave City or Brownsville for
movies
and stuff?
Oh yeah, we'd, after work hours, if you didn't have something extra to do or something, schooling or something you wanted to do, why, we could usually log out, sign out, Or we'd get on a what we call a company truck and go. We were free to go to the movies and to any town that we wanted to around, or game, basketball games, or movies, or just anything for some recreation. Of course, we all, when that happened, there had to be about a truckload, which was something like a dump truck with about three or four seats in it across it, and all the boys could get on it, which is maybe 12, 15. Well, that was the transportation there and back. And we weren't really allowed or supposed to have an automobile in our name or really be caught driving it. But that was a rule that was broken quite often, I'll tell you that, because I helped do it. And I had friends that did the same thing, I know very well. And it wasn't the thing that was really so strict on. But that was the way it was really supposed to be.
Which projects did you work on, or what kind of job did you do while you were in the CCC?
Well, let's see. I guess the first job I was really assigned to that had any work to do was the rock masonry. And that was sandstone, because some of the buildings down there, such as the garage and the warehouse, things like that, were built out of the sandstone rock. And we had a quarry that had rock that was really suitable for that type of building. And we'd simply blast them out, pry them out, and take a suitable hammer for that purpose and chip them out reasonably square. And so they could be used to build a building like that, which is real nice. They were real pretty. And I could do about two rocks a day if I worked real hard. From that, I got hurt a little bit doing that. Got some steel in my arm right there from a hammer. And they took me off of that, and I simply saw that the men had water wherever they went. They gave me a job, which is very, very light duty. Then from that, we had a water truck, and we used it mostly to take water to projects where cement was being mixed, or even had a sprinkler on the back of it to, at that time there was mostly gravel roads, which is dusty, and we would maybe sprinkle roads down to keep the, that was a very, very easy job. Of course, all I had to do was back the truck under a big hose and let it fill up, and I'd drive it to where it was going, and whoever was there usually took care of the rest of it. So it was kind of fun doing that, you know, easy.
Did you have any other jobs? You said you drove a dump truck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, after that. Well, and boys, and you take 200 boys and them scattered out here and there, it wasn't nothing unusual to get mumps or measles or anything like that, maybe that they didn't have in their childhood days. So came my turn to get the mumps, and I did. So they took us up to Louisville, me, and put me in the hospital up there. Said, just all you got to do is lay down here, and when your jaws go down, why, you can go back to work. And since I didn't really know what was happening when I took them, I didn't try to avoid anybody, so I strode them out pretty well. Even my own family, even my grandmother that was about 70 years old, took them. So I was sorry about that, but I really didn't pay any attention to a little ache or pain at that time, and look over and go on. And since my jaw started swelling, I realized that it was the mumps, so I turned it in that I was sick. So they took me by ambulance up there. But pretty soon the whole ward was filled up with guys with mumps. But all we had to do was stay in there, and then when we came back, why? Number 2, number 543, was broken up. The boys were all gone. Some of our gear was still there. And they had me transferred to number 4, which is on the north side of Green River. That, I guess, is when I started driving the dump truck. One of the drivers simply goofed up one day, and he lost his truck driving job. And that was something that seemed pretty easy to everybody, and they wanted to do it. So since I had a license to do it, why, they asked me if I wanted to drive a dump truck. And I said, yeah, I'd like to. So actually, I did that until my last days. That was the end of it after I, in other words, the last day I spent, and not the last, well, the last day that I worked, I had pneumonia and didn't know it. And it was probably on a Friday. That Friday afternoon, my father came after me to take me home for a visit. And I went to bed. Then when come Monday, I should have gone back to work. I didn't, which I was, as a rule, counted AWOL. But they found out about it, and they sent the ambulance over to pick me up at home. And after that, then my father was out of the country working, and somebody needed to be around home with the rest of the family, so he requested that I be discharged, and so I could be at home to kind of watch after things while he was gone. So actually, the dump truck was the last job that I did in CC's.
I guess you could pick any of the jobs that you did if you would like, and describe a typical day for you. What time you got up and...
Oh, yeah, we'd get up, I guess, probably 6 o'clock. That would give us time to go to the, we call it latrine, get shaved up or washed, whatever we wanted to do. And the barracks we had, wasn't equipped with bathrooms or anything. It was a separate building. Then after that, why, we'd go to the chow hall and eat. And then we usually get through with that in time to go back for the barracks for a few minutes. Then at 8 o'clock, we'd assemble out by the ECW building and was assigned to our jobs, whatever they might be. In my case, like I said, was the dump truck. Then I'd go to the garage and take my dump truck out, have it gassed up. Then I was ready for the day for whatever. Could be hauling gravel. It could be hauling telephone poles. They had a lot of telephone poles to be hauled. They didn't have radios like they do nowadays and for communication. So I did a lot of that too. And we would usually finish the job up in time to get back to the camp by 4:30. Then we'd have time to wash up, take a bath, and get ready for chow again. Then we was on our own again, see?
So, after you work, then everything was your free time?
As a rule, it was. Now, we had the park had a terrible fear of fires, and we had quite a few of them those days. And a lot of times on weekends, like if you're a truck driver, you had to had to stay in. You weren't allowed to go out because you was on duty just in case a fire broke out, and you had to to take a crew of men out to fight the fire. So we had to do that part of the time. We didn't. But as a rule, at 4:30, when you got back in, you was pretty free to do what you wanted to. But so long as you was back by the next morning at roll call.
What did you do with your free time? We talked a little bit about that
earlier. Oh, well, like I said a while ago, I usually would leave the thing if I could, and if I didn't, we had a recreation hall. We had maybe one or two pool tables and ping pong, books to read, and we call it a canteen, which you could buy odds and ends, Coke, and sit around and drink a Coke for an hour maybe, and talk with a friend, or maybe just sack out on your bunk. Maybe write a letter or two, things like that. And it wasn't too dull because there was usually something to do. And two, each camp, just about, I think all four of them, had a baseball diamond. And the baseball was pretty big. That was a pretty good game for them. A lot of boys and a lot of good players in there. And you got, say, a couple hundred boys to pick over. Well, you usually could find somebody could play ball, box, or whatever like that.
So did you participate in those organized athletics sometimes?
Yeah, some. I couldn't compete with some of the bigger boys, but, oh, yeah, I did it, you know, whatever was going. And as a rule, you'd find a couple of guitars in the company. Somebody could play a guitar and sing, and I did a little of that, too. And the rest, maybe. And we had nice big lawns between the barracks, places that we could, in the summertime, why we could lay out there and tell big tales and pick the guitars or banjos or whatever and kill time like that.
To what extent did you participate in the education program?
After so long a time there, it just about all played out. I was in history. I took history. I don't remember what we called it in there, really. I remember we had what we called an educational building. And one educational advisor. And he pretty well took care of the whole thing. But I took a little part in just about all of it. But after so long a time, I got more interested in electronics than anything else, which at that time was, there's a lot of electricity used, but radios was about the only thing of any complications. But like in my case, I like to wiring a building for lights, things like that. And that was about the last thing I did, you know, as far as my education, because as I said, if at that stage of the game, I'll put it that way, the CCs were being phased out. A lot of the men were already going to the Army or Navy, and that was about the extent of the education, because the educational advisor was even dismissed.
I'm going to turn the tape over right now before it runs out. This is the second side of the tape of my interview with Mr. Troy Davis. Tell me about some of the pranks that the CCC boys played on each other. I know that there was a lot of them.
Oh, the sky would be the limit. Some things that it'd be hard to really hard to explain, but you could tell a CC boy almost by the way, of course, by the way he was dressed when he was in his work clothes. And our work clothes were dungarees, and which was fitted with two back pockets, and you wouldn't keep those pockets over a couple of days till somebody'd come up behind you and rip them right off. See, that was a big joke. Or put a burning cigarette in there, and it didn't take too long to discover that was there. It could burn a hole in the pocket and maybe cause a little blister or two. And it was nothing unusual for some boy to be out, his extra pair of shoes or two be nailed to the barracks floor, or had a thing. Of course, we had the army-type bunks, do this short sheet deal, or put cornflakes in their beds when we knew they was coming in late at night, or that's some of the most frequent things that was done, everyday thing, and even fix a guy's bunk where it would fall with him when maybe come in late. And and it, that would cause, if a boy come in a little bit loop-legged, why, he'd have quite a time getting his bed to where he could get in it. Even if it fell down, why, he'd probably have to just go ahead and sleep with it on the floor.
I suppose when you get that many young guys together, you're going to get
there's some of all kinds. And what one couldn't think of, why, another one could. I remember one time, this was kind of an army thing, but I guess I had weekend duty that time, and not only I did, but there's quite a few of the boys there. And one boy that didn't have a real good personality, maybe he wasn't liked too good, he was taking a little nap about the middle of the day, laying flat of his back, so some of them went around, picked up all the matchsticks they could find, little pieces like that, put them about the middle of his stomach. He had his shirt on, of course, and put a pretty good pile in there and set him afire and went off and left him. And before he could wake up, well, of course, the front of his shirt was burned.
Oh,
and maybe
God.
He had a blister. And was nobody around much to see what happened when he woke up. So things like that, they were some pretty ornery things pulled, but one of the most thing that happened just about every day was somebody's pocket being ripped off, because they really didn't have to have them, because there wasn't much to carry around anyway. And it was, I guess, kind of fun. I never did really do a thing like that, but I wasn't past doing some little something if I could think of something to do, like fixing a guy's bunk. I told him about a while ago, but they could think of a lot of things to do, and nailing a guy's boots to the floor was a pretty ornery thing. Took a little time to get them up, but. And a funny thing, nobody would ever tell who did it. They'd somehow they usually get around to find out who did it, but it's kind of hard to do. But most of the boys, when they're together a while, they usually knew who the prankster was, and maybe sometimes he was really accused of something that some of the other guys did. But it was all in fun, and everybody got along with it all right anyway.
Was there much interaction among the different camps?
You mean like
number two and number four, or number three or four? Did the men in the different camps have much to do with each other?
Oh yeah, they did. As a matter of fact, well, I'll say, yeah, they worked together. I've known them, you know, being on the same work detail. And they, so far as I know, they got along good, and it was could be almost an every weekend thing that one company would play another company a ball game, whether it be basketball, softball, or baseball. And yeah, they had, they was pretty closely associated a lot of the times like that.
How did the white people in the area feel about the presence of blacks in the camp nearby?
There wasn't very much said about it, really. There was no problems. There might, there'd be more problem, if there was any problems at all, it would be more apt to be between the black company and the white company, which I didn't, I never did see any trouble at all, really. But I'd heard, you know, I'd hear once in a while a little friction or a little problem like that. But really, I never did know. The surrounding people around the neighborhood, I never heard any kick at all. I got along very well with it.
So you said there might have been a little friction between just the CC kids.
Yeah, more so than any other thing. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't, to my knowledge, wasn't very much. It was a very little thing. Just some little misunderstanding or maybe a little argument or something like that. But there was no serious problem that I ever remember of.
Well, you were a local resident too, so you can give me a good perspective on this. How did the local residents feel about the CCC being in the area?
As a rule, it was okay. Naturally, there's a little misunderstandings or a little friction at times because, well, there's always people, regardless of if the CCs were here or not, that were a little bit temperamental, I'd say, and likewise some of the boys in there. So there'd be a little thieving going on, stealing, and maybe they'd, some of the people would kick on account of some of the boys would get a little too much to drink once in a while. That would probably cause a little trouble. And, this is a thing I've commented about different times, that I think the CC's furnished a lot of husbands for a lot of local girls in there, you know. There's a lot of them, even my oldest sister. She married one of them. Now, he didn't live too far from here, but he was from out of our neighborhood. We didn't know anything about him until he came in. And, in my mind, I can think of just lots of them that married. And some of the girls would go to their, maybe their state or their community, and a lot of them would settle around here, like Mr. Cleese up here. He was from Indiana when he came to the CCs, and he married down here, and he's, of course, still here. And that was something that that happened. Like I said, it furnished a lot of the girls' dates and eventually husbands. So,
somebody told me that he said he didn't know if it was a rumor or not. Certain girls in the area setting fires out in the woods so that the CCC boys would all come out.
Well, now I never did know or witness or really know about things like that. But that is something that I wouldn't doubt a bit. Yeah, they things like that would happen.
If the CCC and the local residents generally got along pretty well, how did the local residents feel about the park itself? I know a lot of people were probably displaced.
That caused more confusion and disturbance and friction or whatever than the CCs ever did. Of course, the park bought the land at first, but that wasn't too good. That left a bitter taste in a lot of people's mouth, you know. I couldn't say that my family was happy about moving out because it had been their home. The land had been theirs for years and years. You know, probably some of the older ones were born there. and great-great-grandfathers owned it. So, but my family really didn't have any problems, even though they weren't happy about having to do that particular thing. But it worked out okay. They just have to get out and find another farm if they wanted to move on a farm for sale, which in my case, my grandfather did. Now, my immediate family, we never owned a farm. We usually stayed on some of the houses, and like I said, I think we had something near like 200 acres, and that's a lot of land, you know. A lot of men could farm that, especially when they just had horses and mules to work. See, it took a long time, so anyway, my grandfather did, not many miles from here, found another farm. But it was a lot smaller than the one he was used to. But he did. He bought it, and actually visit back into the area again, you know, quite often.
Was there much tension between the Park Service and the local residents? I had also heard some things about fires.
Oh yeah, in the beginning. Yeah. That was one of those in the same period of time, because there's some people was so bitter, and maybe they were mistreated. Now, I wasn't really old enough to realize exactly what was going on, and who was to blame for this or that. But there was a lot of friction, and I'd say that it could have been on both sides. Some of the people that came in here that didn't quite understand the people here, didn't quite understand that they didn't want to move. Or the people didn't quite understand the rules and regulations that these people that came here were putting on. Like, well, and there's questions in my mind about different things. But actually, that was before it was really made a national park, because it wasn't made a national park until 1941. And a lot of this problem happened long before that. That was when they were in here buying up the... And if you didn't want to sell, why, there was a possibility of a condemnation suit to get you out. And some people would, they'd get a notice to move, that they're supposed to vacate their premises at a certain time, and they would not do it. They'd stay on for a while until they got more and more. And that was a sad thing to both sides, to my way of looking at it. And I really think that you couldn't put the blame on either one, because I think the blame was on both sides.
When the people moved out, did a lot of them stay in the area, try to stay in the area?
Well, yeah, a lot of them did. As a matter of fact, the way we are today, we're very close. At that time, just a very few miles away might seem quite a distance. As a matter of fact, where my grandfather bought land and moved to me it seemed quite a distance. And he left, he was probably one of the first ones to leave. About 1934, 33 or 4, I believe the CCs came in here in 1933, and he moved about that time. And it was only, if you're familiar with where Rocky Hill is, mm-hmm. which is not many miles from here now, but at the time it seemed quite a distance. But no, I'd say most of the people did settle at a reasonable distance of the park around just outside.
How successful do you feel the CCC was in relieving the effects of the Depression?
Well, I think it was a great thing. It was a real program. Like I said, I believe before, the men in there, even though a lot of them weren't educated, they still had a skill at something, at carpenter, at electrical work, at masonry, and all those things, and soil and moisture work. I had a little something to do with most of it myself, and I learned some things, I think it was one of the best programs that's really ever come about, because like I said, it did furnish some work. It's furnished some of the younger men and even some of the older men a place to go to work. The money was little, but still at that time a little money would buy a lot of things compared to this day and time. You could buy a dollar's worth of something with a dollar and really get it. And if I might put it just like that, and it improved like roads. We had no roads through here, through what is now the park, which that's where the CCCs were located. The roads were most of them dirt roads. They came in with equipment. They made a lot better roads. They did work in the cave to improve that, such as trails. I'm not saying that they rearranged the cave or anything like that, because they didn't. But they improved the trails and things like that. And to me, I'll use myself for an example. It was a thing that I kind of enjoyed, really. I didn't really know it so much at the time, but I had friends in there, and everybody realized that the other guy was in there for a purpose. He was either learning, and he was learning. He was making a little money. His family was getting some money, and the work that went on wasn't bad work. It was good work they did. Even some of it seemed a little bit useless. I remember one particular detail that a lot of the men did. They went out to the woods, and every dead tree they come to, they'd push it over or saw it down. They didn't have a chainsaw, a power saw, nothing like that. The old cross cut. And even stumps, it might be a foot high or 2 feet. They'd even saw that down. Which to me, that seemed a little bit ridiculous, because it was on its way out anyway. But it gave the men something to do and some experience.
Were there any problems that you could see in the CCC, either in general as a big program or on the local area at Mammoth Cave?
No, I don't think so. Not really.
What did you do when you got out?
What did I do when I got out?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. What? Well, I went to the city and got a job there. That in Louisville. And I didn't stay there very long. And I have a lot of people in Indianapolis. From there, I went to Indianapolis, and I got a pretty good job there. Then I really quit that because I felt myself going right into the military. I knew that was happening because that thing was getting pretty well underway then, and so many men were already being drafted. I very well remember I worked at a place called Bridgman's Dairy. It was a place where they bottled milk, or I believe maybe the cartons had just come out. And I don't know what my job was. I really happened up on that job accidentally, almost, And it seemed like there's a lot of guys looking for work at that time too. And I remember one day, earlier, I really didn't have any responsibilities, wasn't married or anything. And I got a little bit homesick. And I got to thinking one day, well, I should be home. I'd like to be home. And besides, the war is going to get me. The military is going to get me. It's just a matter of time. So one afternoon, I told my foreman or my boss, I don't remember his title, but anyway, I told him, I says, well, I think today is my last day. And he wondered why. I said, well, I'm a little bit homesick, for one thing. And I says, some of my relatives are going down in my part of the country on vacation. It'd be a good time for me to go with them. So I think I'll call this quits. And for some reason, I really don't know why he liked me that well, but he said, he told me he'd see me go. I said, well, I don't really know what I'm doing here anyway, because nobody ever tells me what to do. And he says, well, you think you must go home? I said, well, I'd like to. And he said, well, just give me a good reason why. I said, well, on top of being homesick, I said, I've heard that you're going to put me on a job that I really don't want. And I had heard that. And I was going to be the first guy at the plant to check the product, the milk product, as it come in. I was to test it to see if it was fit for use. I said, I really don't want that. And he simply said, well, I won't do that if you'll stay. I said, well, I'm still going home. So he says, well, you being from Kentucky, maybe you like old drink once in a while. And I says, I'm from Kentucky, but no, that don't mean anything. He said, well, you know, there's not supposed to be any alcohol beverage in this plant. But he says, I'll tell you, I keep a little up in my office. And he says, if you'll stay, he said, every morning you want to come up there with me, well, you can have a little drink. I said, I appreciate it, but I don't drink. And by that time, we were walking, and by that time I was almost out of the plant. And he says, I'll give you $25 more a month on your salary if you'll stay. I said, well, so long, I'm going anyway. And but I came back home, which at that time, the number one camp had vacated. The Army had hired my dad as a caretaker there, had a lot of equipment there, and they used it. And occasionally from Fort Knox, they came down and check out some of the CC equipment. It was my dad's duty to check it out, keep records of it. So from that, when I got home, it wasn't very long till I was called, to the draft board, and I got my classification card, which is 1A, of course. And since I was kind of skinny, some of the relatives didn't think I'd really have to go to the war. And as it happened, as it ended up, I and one uncle was the only one that had to go. But they didn't find anything at all wrong with me. So I was home just a very few days after that until I was called. Then I actually joined the Navy. I was in the Navy in the war. But the CCs were all gone. There's a lot of fond memories, and there's still a lot of the men left around, a lot of the boys locally that was in there. And we'd get together and talk about it at times. And once in a while, I do yet run upon one that's spent some time. I don't go around looking for them really, but if they happen up while we have to stop and talk about it for a while.
Is there anything else about your experience in the CCC that you'd like to tell me about?
No, not really. I've thought it over quite a bit since you called, or since I got the call that you were coming up. And I've really thought more about what a good thing it was. Now, that's not to say that there wasn't problems and little problems. Sometimes maybe a little more of a problem than others, but to me, it was a great program. And I met a lot of good men, a lot of good boys and men. And some of them were, I'd say, highly skilled. Some of them were sent there to teach. You know, we had foremen and things like that was familiar with every job. And believe me, they were highly skilled. And some of the enrollees, it was no time until they were just about as skilled and almost that way from the very start. So, and they'd get promotions that way, see.
Do you feel like you learned some skills that have helped you later on in your life?
Not a whole lot, really, compared to what I've learned since that, because I'll say that because, like I said before, I feel now, I didn't then maybe, but I know, I realize I was a kid. You take a boy like I was in his teens, why, you didn't take anything too seriously. Or at least I didn't, and a lot of the guys I was with didn't seem to. So, I learned to get along with people, with bunches of boys, and which came in handy and later. And, rock masonry, of course, like I did learn that. But I wasn't into the carpenter business long enough. And like I said, the electrical part of it, I learned. And I could say I learned quite a bit from it, but it came in pretty handy in later years. But to me, after I think about it, it was a fun thing. And I think about it more seriously, like I said, it was a real good thing, and it did furnish a lot of jobs for a lot of people that need them. And I can realize that really more now than I could at the time.
Well, I guess I'll turn this off now then. Thank you so much.